in our last meeting here of the year. We're going to hear three lovely bills. The first is House Bill number 151, second is H.J.R. 22, and then House Bill 45. We do have a quorum to conduct business consisting of the Majority Leader, Senator Stevens, the President, Senator Green, and myself, McGuire. And so we'll take House Bill number 151 first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. I'm staff for Representative Craig Johnson. House Bill 151, as you can all read, essentially requires uniform indemnification and hold harmless provisions in professional services contracts for all public agencies within the state of Alaska. That's what the bill says it does, and when I first came on board with this piece of legislation, I didn't necessarily know what indemnification clauses or contracts or hold harmless defense, all that meant. So essentially, for me, what this bill does is close a loophole that's existed in public agency contracts in the state of Alaska for some time now that has caused considerable problems for companies in the design profession. Essentially, what's going on right now is there's the potential for public agencies, when they're writing these contracts with professional design companies, to include provisions that allows them to essentially shirk all their responsibility for negligence onto the agency that they're contracting with, the design consultant company that they contract with. Now, that's not happening a whole lot. The vast majority of public agencies, all of the departments, actually use the language that this bill seeks to mimic. This bill mirrors DOT language that's been used for years. It's tried and true language. And what this bill does is take that language and make it standard across the board. This bill has gone through a couple committees in the House side. It went through House State Affairs. It went through House Judiciary. And in that process, we feel like it was refined. A couple problems were addressed, and we're here to address any questions that you might have today, and we hope to have your support.
Okay. Question for the bill sponsor's representative. Senator Stevens.
Tell me again why we should pass this.
Pardon?
Tell me again why we should pass this.
Well, because we feel it makes for sound public policy in three ways. It ensures fair business practice between the public and private sectors. Like I said before, you're not seeing a whole lot of these contracts out there, but the problem does exist. And essentially, you can have the same job with the same agencies and come up with two totally different contracts, one which is very unfair and one which is pretty standard business practice that most of the state already uses. So it's essentially closing a loophole. Sorry, through the chair.
And we do have Dale Nelson from the Alaska Professional Design Council on the line, who might be able to offer more thoughts from the professional point of view. And Senator Bundy and Senator French have joined us, and we are hearing House Bill number 151. Okay, so let's go to Mr. Dale Nelson. Are you there? You speak up just a little bit there.
Let me get the mic. Can you hear me? I brought the microphone in front of me.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Dale Nelson. I'm with the Alaska Professional Design Council and chairman of the Legislative Liaison Committee. And we should have one other person from the insurance company to testify as well from their standpoint. But let me answer the questions that was brought up. It is that the purpose of this bill, just kind of go through in a bullet form, if I may, is to standardize indemnification requirements for all public agencies in Alaska. And we've had a variety of different requirements, and the Alaska Department of Transportation is what we're trying to mimic, as Trevor just mentioned. The University of Alaska has had a variety of requirements upon us, is that they're requesting for the AEs, the architects, engineers, designers, in their contracts to cover, indemnify the agency that we're contracting with for their errors and omissions or issues that have come up, and that should be addressed by our insurance lady that should be there to testify. And it's also to make the responsible, and it is we're not shedding a responsibility, but it is to make the AEs responsible for their negligent acts, errors, and omissions. That is still a requirement that's to be there. Make each financially responsible for their own liabilities. Fairly apportion joint liabilities on a comparable fault basis. And, as I said, is to mimic ADOT's indemnification. And also part of this is to define public agencies for the purpose of this bill. Those are quickly bullet forms. I mentioned the University of Alaska. We have been working with the University of Alaska. We've met with the Board of Regents in February, presented this to them, and the Board of Regents and President Hamilton has pushed forward on this. And we are coming to agreement, which is reflecting what you have before you. And but there's a lot of other agencies who are just trying to level the playing field. I'm available for some questions.
Hey, questions for Mr. Dale Nelson with the Alaska Professional Design Council. Okay, no questions. And there's somebody else here in the audience wishing to testify.
I'll just slide in here. Brad Thompson, Director of Division of Risk Management for the State of Alaska. And perhaps I could respond to Senator Stevens' question. The foundation or the reason for this is today a professional design engineer, architect, obtaining a E&O policy, an errors and omissions policy, there is no contractual liability protection within your insurance policy. So when you sign a document with a owner of a record that you're doing work for and commit to obligate beyond your own comparative fault, you are uninsured for that. And so the State of Alaska, in its contract documents that DOT has used, has always had comparative fault allocation within the indemnity language of its professional contracts. We have used that for decades. Some public entities go beyond the comparative fault allocation, which today is an uninsured risk for the independent design and other professionals. This statute would obligate all public agencies as defined in the bill to use a comparative fault allocation within their indemnity language when they hire an independent professional. And that's really why this bill is being presented.
Senator Stevens? No, just thinking.
Well, I guess, just tell me once again, what bad things are going to happen to the state if we don't pass this bill?
Good question.
Again, through the chair, Senator Stevens, the State of Alaska, DOT, and other departments that follow the risk management guidance as far as boilerplate terms and conditions use this language and have done so for years. There are other public agencies, the university and others in the past, who have, if you will, cut and paste other stronger indemnity terms in contracts. And when they do so, an independent professional signing such a document to obtain the work is obligating themselves beyond what they can buy insurance for. The state DOT does not use this language. It uses the language this bill is trying to have everyone use. So we're already doing this. There's no effect to the State of Alaska, DOT, and other departments in the executive branch.
Senator French?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon. I don't know if I've ever seen quite so many letters in support of a bill as are in your packet. It's quite impressive. My question is, with 25 letters of support, who opposes this bill?
Senator French, through the chair. We really didn't have a whole lot of opposition as it made its way through the House committees. We did run into one stumbling block. Initially, the way the bill was first written, there could have been some unintended consequences, particularly with the Permanent Fund Corporation. Language was narrowed to address the bill specifically to construction-related companies. That was addressed later on in Judiciary Committee. It was pointed out that perhaps the builders are being left out of this bill, and the bill was put on hold for a bit until we could get the blessing from ABC and AGC, Alaska General Contractors. And we did get that blessing, and there is one bill of support from them, from ABC, I believe, and then from AGC, they didn't get around to doing the actual letter, the official letter from their agency, but we did have verbal approval. Other than that, there was the university had some very slight issues that were resolved, and other than that, we really haven't heard any opposition. We've talked to other state agencies, including municipalities, who we thought we might have problem with, and that hasn't been the case.
And it sounds like, if I can just follow up, it sounds like you have nearly perfect alignment within the business community. Is there any opposition from labor groups or folks from that side of the world?
None that we have heard of. I don't think it pertains to them a whole lot.
Doesn't affect their
through the chair. Not to my knowledge.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Bundy.
Thank you, and I understand and appreciate all the support. I just have to observe, it just seems strange that we have to pass a law to keep the university from doing something that would be harmful to itself. I mean, why don't they just adopt DOT's style, and why don't they do things that don't encourage design professionals to work with them?
Through the chair, Senator Bundy, honestly, I'm not comfortable answering on behalf of the university. I think perhaps Mr. Thompson would be able to address that a little more than I could. I mean, as far as the specifics, why they wouldn't willingly adopt the DOT language, I can't answer that.
Yeah. Well, I will, as an ex-university professor, log that as a rhetorical question, and note that it may not be the first time the university should be protected from itself.
Bundy's back. Okay. Thank you very much. Anybody else here in the audience to testify on House Bill number 151? Anybody online? Okay, seeing and hearing none, then public testimony is closed. Brings the bill back before us for committee discussion. Is there a motion?
Oh, I move House Bill 151 out of committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal notes.
Okay, is there an objection to moving 151 out of the committee? Okay, hearing and seeing none, House Bill 151 has moved. And so, next is HJR 22 with Representative Anna Faircloth. Welcome to Senate State Affairs.
Great for the motion.
Yes, we have a CS before us, Senator Green.
I move the CS version / C be our working document.
Okay, any objection to that motion? Okay, hearing none, we have C before us. Tell us about it.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's nice to be on your side of the house.
Yes.
Before you today is a resolution denouncing the National Entertainment Collectibles Association production of Rapist Number One Doll. I thought this was a fairly simple bill. apparently, it's got quite a bit of notoriety in the press, and people are concerned with my investment of time on this particular issue. So, for the record, I believe I've spent under an hour talking and working on this, but I just thought it was a pretty practical and common sense that we would not go around and make children's toys federal criminal crimes. And so what I object to personally is an organization that would label a doll rapist number one, leading this legislator to believe that could follow by rapist number two, three, four, five, and six. Rape is a crime that destroys families, individuals, and it touches body and soul. It is offensive to me to have a doll on the market that's named Rapist Number One. When you work, as I have for the past 4 years, with individuals who have been victims of rape, what you find is over and over again, dehumanization and a depersonalization of the crime. People don't understand how much this affects society and the economy as it goes forward. Just very quickly, Cherry, Dakota, and Rapist Number One selling a three-pack for under $40. One of my concerns is that in the three-pack, a parent might not understand that Rapist Number One is inside that three-pack. By itself, online, Amazon.com, I believe, it sells for under $20. I'm not trying to ban a product. I'm not asking people to say that this shouldn't be available for sale, but what I am asking parents and Alaskans to do is to look at how we use our disposable income and choose not to purchase this doll. It's the label that I object to, not their freedom of speech to do so. And with that, I'll just say that I believe with Alaska's rates of rape, we've been number one 20 out of the last 27 years and 27 out of the last 27 years in the top five. You are 2.2 times more likely to be raped in the state of Alaska, 25% more likely than the average in the entire nation. And so I think Alaska should take personal offense to an organization that thinks that this is an appropriate label for a doll. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Representative Faircloth. And I personally appreciate you doing this. And I think it's incumbent upon us as policymakers to look around at the world we're in and see what kind of messages we're sending. And I don't think it's inappropriate at all, especially, as you say, in a state that has such a considerable problem with rape. And we continue to look at why that is. And some of the things that we do know is that, you know, we are sending messages to our kids in their formative years about the value of women, about the value of human life. And as a mother of a young son, I particularly appreciate it because, you know, I look at some of these video games where, you know, you're murdering people and their blood is coming out and you're raping people and I just think, you know, we do have an obligation and free speech is important in our society, but, you know, there's a point, and particularly as a child, where I think parents should be paying attention to the kind of toys and interaction that they have, because on a subconscious level they may be forming opinions about human beings, about women, about how they conduct themselves. And so I personally appreciate it, and I did not know. And I could see myself at Toys R Us in a toy aisle, and I'm very confused about a lot of these toys. I don't know where they stem from or anything, and seeing a three-pack of toys and not knowing that that was a rapist doll and all of the history behind it. And so I appreciate it. Further discussion? Is there anybody here in the audience to testify on House Joint Resolution number 22? Anybody online? Okay, hearing and seeing none, that brings the House Joint Resolution back before us for committee discussion. Senator Green?
Yeah, no, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the bill.
Okay.
I move H.A.R. 22, denounce sale of rapist dolls, out of committee with individual zero fiscal needs.
Okay, is there an objection? Hearing and seeing none, H.A.R. 22 has moved. And that brings us to our thank you. That brings us to our final bill, House Bill number 45, with Representative Guttenberg. And this bill's been around. State Veterans Cemetery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for having me here, and thank you for having this bill before you. It was a number of years ago when the widow of somebody that I knew for a long time came to me and said, Rick would like to have been buried in Fairbanks, but he never had the opportunity. There were no veterans cemeteries. So I started exploring the issue. It turns out there's two national cemeteries in the state of Alaska, which is all we are currently entitled to, one on Fort Rich and one in Sitka. So in order for a vet to be buried not from those communities, you would have to travel there and be buried there, and the hardships that the families would face of having to travel back and forth to visit them. But there is a program, which is what we discovered, with the VA, that allows states to have state veteran cemeteries meeting their criteria on population and number of vets. This bill started off focused on Fairbanks, which is the only place in the state that's currently eligible. It went through the committee process that allowed any community that meets the standards that the VA would like to build a cemetery to apply. The bill actually just sets up the process that allows the state to apply. and all of the criteria and everything else that's in the bill are the VA specifications and criteria for who gets buried there, what happens. They actually pay for the construction of the cemetery, pay a burial allocation for each interment. Montana just got its third state vet cemetery, and this would allow the state to simply apply, and if any place was eligible, to receive those benefits, allow our veterans to be buried close to their homes and their families. Simply sets up the process for the state to apply and go forward on that.
Okay. Thank you very much, Representative Guttenberg. Questions for the bill's sponsor? Okay. Anybody else here in the audience wishing to testify in House Bill number 45 on state veterans cemeteries? Anybody online? Okay, hearing none, public testimony is closed. Brings the bill back before us for committee discussion.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bundy.
Yeah, just for the record, I wanted to make sure I understood that this does not encumber a financial obligation on the state, that this would be just an enabling mechanism, and the financing of these cemeteries would be a federal responsibility.
Yes, the Senator Bundy, the construction is basically covered by the feds. Then there is an internment a fee that they get. There could be a maintenance cost, but we don't know what that is because we don't know anything about where it would be, any of the conditions about it.
So there may be an operating expense.
Yes, and I think there is a spreadsheet in there from the VA, what they see it as would be about, I think, just ballpark, just putting numbers together, 80,000, could be 80,000 a year. But the if we applied and were successful, I think the soonest that could happen would be in, was it 2011, 2012? So it's way down the road.
Thank you.
So for veterans right now in Fairbanks, I assume, so they're interned at if they want to be buried in Fairbanks, just at a cemetery then?
Yeah, just the normal city the two cemeteries in town.
Well, I do know this is an important issue to some of the veterans, and I know it goes on to finance, where I think you guys will further discuss what those dollars are and so forth. So any further discussion? Senator French. Yes.
Madam Chair, I would move HCS for House Bill number 45 from committee with the attached zero and indeterminate fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Okay, is there an objection? Okay, hearing and seeing none, House Bill number 45 is moved and we're adjourned.
Thank you.